We're now up to Shmuel Aleph, Perek Beis. Last week we learned how Chana came to Mishkan Shiloh, and she was Mispalel for a son. Eli gave her the bracha, and Shmuel was born. Just to point out, so she stayed at home with Shmuel for 2 years. After 2 years, she came back to Eli. Now, it's not clear if Eli even knows what she had davened for. Eli gave her a bracha, Yitin Hashem es she'loseich, Hashem should grant your request that you asked from him. And then she said, I should find favor in your eyes, and she went home. It's not clear if Eli even knows whether she had asked for a child or not. Anyways, 2 years goes by, and now she shows up with this little boy, who's just 2 years old, and she wants Eli to raise him. So first she has to sort of jog his memory. She doesn't know, does Eli know who this little boy is? Does he know who she is? And the Malbim points out over there, when she came to Eli, she said to him, Ani ha'isha, I'm the woman, hanitzeves imcha bozeh. I was standing with you. Now, remember, there was a woman who was here with you, and you were also misfalo, you gave me a bracha. Remember, we were here together, and bozeh was here by the Mishkan, and I was here, lispalo Hashem, I davened to Hashem, and her davening was extraordinary, as we discussed. Anyways, Eliyah consented that he would take Shmuel and raise him. And now we're up to Perek Beis. Very often a person's caught in a difficult situation, and he's sort of desperate. He doesn't know how he's going to get out of it. And he makes a neder that if such a thing happens, I promise I'll do this and I'll do that. You know, all of his dreams. And then all of a sudden, you know, it comes true. Baruch Hashem. Now he sort of has a little bit of regret. You know, it's like the guy who's stuck in summer traffic. He doesn't know if he's going to arrive in his destination in time for Shabbos. You know, the clock's ticking. It's Friday afternoon. He says, if I get there in time for Shabbos, I'll do whatever he promises. And then Itak arrives in time for Shabbos. And he's wondering, do I talk? I have to do it. What can I do? It's really what I accepted is irrational. But out of desperation, he did it. The beauty of what we're going to learn right now is Chana came back 2 years later. And after her boy was given to her, it's not clear, in the song that she is mispalel now, she refers to an akara, a woman who can't have children, Yolda Shiva, who gives birth to seven, who gives birth to many children. That seems to imply that she was an akara, she wasn't able to have children. But some mepharshim explained that when it discussed in Perek Aleph, her condition, it said, Ki sogar Hashem ba'ad rachma. Hashem like closed up her womb. That it could be, it was just sort of, you know, it was a decree from Hashem. She was physically able to have children, just Hashem didn't give her children. If it's the latter, and that she was able to have children, just Hashem didn't grant it to her. So it's something to, you know, she promised she's going to give up her child to Hashem. She's going to let him stay with Eli in the Mishkan and Shiloh. She's going to give up her boy for Hashem. If she's able to have children, and she made it sort of a desperation, you know, there's always the feeling, a common person would sort of feel, you know, who said it was really such a miracle and I should really go through with this? But no, she had that resolve, and she brought Shmuel to be raised in Mishkan Shiloh. Not only that, her emotions were so strong and her gratitude was so powerful that she sang this song that we're going to say right now. Vatispalel Chana Vatoimar, Chana was mispalel, and she said the following. And we'll see, Poshet, the tefillah of the requests is at least the last pasuk. The rest of it is really not a tefillah as we understand it, although tefillah could mean a song. But tefillah here, this is actually a song of gratitude to Hashem, that everything that happens to us, good or bad, and all the changes, it's all from Hashem. And Chana davened, and she said, Olatz libi b'Hashem, my heart exults and has a tremendous joy with Hashem. Roma karni, my pride is uplifted b'Hashem with Hashem. Rochav pial oivai, my mouth is also widened against my enemies. Ki somachti b'shuasech. b'Yeshua Secha, because I rejoiced in your Yeshua, in your salvation. When a person's going through a difficult situation, it's like his heart sinks. He just doesn't have the life and the excitement and the vitality. His heart's not in it. He feels he can't go on. His heart's not there. He's bent over. He doesn't have the strong. He's not walking with vigor. He doesn't have that height to him. He's bent over, and he's not able to talk often. Hannah said she went through that situation, and now that she was saved, her heart sings. She's lifted up, and she's able to sing out to Hashem. Ki simachti, ki somachti, because I rejoiced. We're going to see that whenever Hannah gave birth, her rival Penina had two children who died. Or Penina had 10 children, according to Chazal. Elkanah said to his wife, "I'm better than you, mi'asara bonim, than 10 sons. Better than the 10 sons of that Penina gave me is my love and my care for you." When Hannah gave birth to a child, Penina lost two of them. It's kind of strange. In other words, Hannah had that simcha. She finally gave birth to a child, and we'll see she had 5 children. When she gave birth to a child, her husband and the whole household was sitting shiva, because the other children had died. But she felt, but her simcha was not just the fact that she had a child, but she realized the simcha was b'Hashem, that she had this relationship with Hashem, that when she cried out and she davened, she was answered. It was a simcha b'Hashem. All atzlibi b'Hashem, ramakarni b'Hashem, not I'm excited about the baby, about the boy, but the fact that she was able to have that, she called out to Hashem, and Hashem answered her, and that gave her that joy. Ki samachti, I have simcha b'Yeshua secha, in your Yeshua, not just that my plight is alleviated, but it's your Yeshua, it comes from you, Hashem. And then she addresses a point that the Malbim and other Mefarshim mentioned. Philosophers are bothered when a person davens to Hashem, when Hashem helps a person out. First of all, Hashem is so great. Does he really care and take an interest and know what every little one of us is doing every moment, what we're thinking? As a Kodesh Baruch Hu is so great, he takes a concern in what's happening with us. And also, if our Kodesh Baruch Hu set the world in a certain order, even if he knows in Olam Haba he'll settle the account, but in this world, to start making changes in the way we act is going to affect the way Hashem is running the world? These are philosophical questions, which Hannah addresses right now. And Hannah says, "Ein Kodesh Kashem." There's no one holy like Hashem. Holy means to be separated from the mundane. Like a holy person. He doesn't have to do with this world. He's like living on a different level, a different plane, a different sphere of existence. He's not involved in the simple life of this world. But ain kadosh Hashem. There's no one who's kadosh, holy like Hashem. Hashem's holiness is totally different than what we're used to. It's not just a greater holiness in quantity. The quality, the whole idea of Kedusha by Hashem is different. You know why? Ki ein biltecha. Because there's nothing besides Hashem. Hashem can't be removed from the world, because the world wouldn't exist. HaKadosh Baruch Hu is mechadish b'chol yom tamid. Every day, constantly, there has to be a input of energy and hashpa from Hashem to keep the world going. So it's not like the Kedusha, like Hashem says, you know, it has nothing to do with the world. If Hashem didn't want this world to be here, it wouldn't be. It's constantly being invigorated and energized by Hashem. Ve'ein tzur ke'elokeinu. And there is no creator like Hashem. Meaning normally, if you go ahead and you make a tape recorder, and then you turn it on and it's not working, I'm going to come back and say, you know, what kind of a machine is this? I buy a tape recorder, a day later it's broken. So if HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes the world, what? He's got to constantly change it. There's not, in other words, can't Hashem make the world that it should just go the way it's going, and you shouldn't have to adjust and change things? But it's not that way. Because HaKadosh Baruch Hu is constantly giving life, energy and vitality to the world, and therefore he's constantly supervising it, and he's given us the ability that by our actions he will modify and adapt and change the way things are being run in this world. There is no creator but like HaKadosh Baruch Hu that's constantly taking care of the world. Altarbu sidarbu sidabru gavoa gavoa. Don't increase and talk and say Hashem so high, so high, if your intention is to say Hashem is so great, and therefore he doesn't take an interest in us, he doesn't run the world based on the way we are. Yetzei osak mipichem, and you say words that are so strong. Osak also can mean words that are removed from the truth, but you're saying things that are incorrect. Kikel deos Hashem. Hashem is a God who knows. He's the kale of knowledge, of Deus Hashem. V'lo niskenu alilos. And to him, actions are counted. Meaning, HaKadosh Baruch Hu knows everything. Ki kale Deus Hashem. But even though Hashem knows everything, yet your action... And Hashem knows what you're going to do. And Hashem knows exactly what you're going to be doing your whole life. But don't think that takes away from your Bechira. You still have free choice. It's something that I don't. The human mind, the Rambam discusses this, but the human mind can't comprehend how that's possible. That it's 100% known what you're going to do, yet you have totally free choice to decide what you want to do. But Hashem is a Kel Deos. Hashem knows, and yet v'lo niskenu alilos. He lets your actions are counted. What you do has an effect, and Hashem will change the world. I mean, Hashem knows that. Hashem knows everything that's going to happen, but it's as if, you know, the way we look at it, it seems as if things were going to be one way, and the way our actions are done, Hashem modifies and adapts the plans for the world. V'lo niskenu alilos. There's a kri and a ksiv here, meaning v'lo is written with an aleph. As if to say, and it's not this way. There's many different ways of explaining this. Some learn v'lo niskenu alilos is as if the actions of Hashem don't seem to be counted, meaning you don't see the actions that Hashem is doing. V'lo niskenu alilos, Hashem's actions are not counted, you're not aware of it. Hashem works behind the scenes. And we read it as if to be above. V'lo niskenu alilos, but the actions are all counted to Hashem. Because the truth is, everything that's done in this world is only because Hashem wants it or lets it happen. As you can wake up in the morning and decide you want to go to Shacharis. But whether you go to Shacharis or not, that's up to Hashem. You wake up in the morning, you want to go to davening, and some people just, their body doesn't cooperate. They can't. They don't have the strength. Or something else happens, you know, that an oin is something beyond their control. So you have the choice, you have bechira to decide what you want to do. But whether it's done or not, whether it happens, v'lo niskenu alilos, it's all actions are counted of Hashem's actions. You can just decide what you would. You just have the bechira. Keshes giborim chatim. Now we're going to mention a number of three different things that are changed constantly in this world: the strong and the weak, those who have children, those who don't. Wealth and poverty, and it seems to us, you know, as if it's not from Hashem. But you notice a phenomena: keshes kiboyrim chatim. The bow of the mighty ones is broken. The mighty people, mighty countries, mighty nations, and they're broken. V'nichsholim, and those that stumble and that are weak, ozru chayil, seem to all of a sudden be girded to have strength. Have strength. Saveim balechem niskoru. Those that are satiated, those that are saveya, those who have plenty. And you look around, and now they're renting themselves out to get a piece of bread. Ureivim, and there are those that are hungry, and also chadelu. They're gone. There's nobody looking, begging for bread. These people that we knew before that are suffering are now doing very well. Arakori yolda shiva. You can have a woman who was an akaru who didn't have any children, and also now she has seven. Shiva sometimes is just taken as a number to mean a lot. Chazal mentioned that Akara Yolda Shiva, as we mentioned, Penina lost two children when Chana gave birth to one. So when Chana had four children, Penina had eight that had passed away. Chana was mispalel that at least Penina should be left with the two that remained. So when Chana had her fifth, Penina remained with her two, but it's also accredited to Chana's special tefillah on behalf of Penina. So at Akari Yolda Shiva, it's as if Chana would have given birth to seven children. Varabas Bonim, and the one with many children, Umlala was cut off, and those children died. So all these things are things that we notice around in the world. But it's all from Hashem. Hashem may misu mechaye. HaKadosh Baruch Hu kills, causes people to die, umechaye, and he gives life. A reference to Tchias HaMeisim, that those that are nifter come back to life. Morid Sha'ol, Hashem brings those down into the Sha'ol, either meaning the grave, or it can mean to Gehenim. Sha'ol has both connotations. Vayoal, and Hashem brings them back up. Chazal are now, there's a discussion whether Kairach has a chelek in Olam Haba. We know that the earth, when he had the machlokes with Moshe Rabbeinu, the earth swallowed him up. It's a machlokes in the Gemara and Sanhedrin. Is Kairach going to have a chelek in Olam Haba? According to Rabbi Eliezer, he does. Moirit Sha'ol Vayoal. Chana was mispalo. HaKadosh Baruch Hu brings some people down into the Sha'ol, down into the depths, into the grave, into Gehenim, Vayoal, but they're brought back up. Chana was mispalo. And Rav Olba speaks about this in his Sefer Ali Shur. It's a person's nature is, sometimes a person has a dormant midah, as a character trait that's not good, but nothing stirs it up. Like Kairach, we know, was jealous. He had kina, he was jealous of Moshe Rabbeinu. He was upset that he wasn't appointed as the Nasi, as the leader of the Shevet. But sometimes a person, a lot of things can get somebody upset. He's not always able to act on it. Kairach, though, felt, you know, if he were to work against Moshe Rabbeinu, he would have a chance of success. Because he sees that he had a descendant who's going to be Shmuel. Shmuel b'koyrei Shmai. Shmuel was one of the greatest. And was on a level with Moshe Aaron b'koyanov, and Shmuel's on that level. With a descendant like Shmuel, he felt, you know, I'm an important person. I'm going to have a descendant, Shmuel. I could stand up to Moshe Rabbeinu. But now, all these things could be his subconscious. He's not even aware of the way his mind is working. But he felt, rationally, that he really has a right, in other words, he has a complaint, he had that kinah, that jealousy that he wasn't the leader, and he built the whole shita, the whole philosophy based on it, that kikol ha'eda kulam kedoshim, everyone's holy, why should just Moshe Rabbeinu be in charge? But it was all sparked by his need that he wanted to be a leader. And he felt it could be done because he had a descendant Shmuel that was going to come out from him. Now, Shmuel didn't do anything wrong. He wasn't even born. This is generations before. But because of Shmuel, that's what gave Kairach the feeling that he could make his mistake, that he could stand up against Moshe Rabbeinu, it's only right that he should be brought back. That Shmuel, the zechus of Shmuel, should save Kairach, who made a mistake because of him. Because of Shmuel, Kairach made his tragic mistake. So Chana was mispalo. Moirit Sha'ol. Hashem brings down into the grave, or into Gehenim, Vayoal, and Hashem brings back up. That Kairach should be brought back up, and therefore, according to that Manda Amar Rabbi Eliezer, Kairach has a chelek in Olam Haba. Hashem Moirishu Mashir. HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes poor, and Hashem makes wealthy. Mashbil, he lowers those that are strong, af meroimim, and he elevates them. In other words, all these things that we mentioned don't seem to, you don't necessarily see the Yad Hashem, but it's all HaKadosh Baruch Hu doing. Make him a offer dol. HaKadosh Baruch Hu establishes, gives, raises from the dirt, the dull, the poor person. Meyashposen from the garbage dump, the one who's even poorer than Yorim Evyon, the Evyon who's the destitute, who's in Lashon HaKodesh, Evyon is has less than the Dal. He's Evyon comes from the word Ta'ev, to desire, that he desires everything. In other words, he's poorer than poor. He's the Evyon, and he's in the garbage looking around for some scraps or something to eat. That's where he's living, in the garbage. May Ashpos Yorim Evyon, HaKadosh Baruch Hu lifts up from the Ashpos this Evyon. And when he lifts him up, Lahoshiv im Nedivim, he doesn't just lift him up a little bit. He places him with the Nedivim, the wealthy people, and Nodiv also means to be generous. That the person who his whole life was surviving by the largesse of others and living in this garbage, now a son can be a Nodiv to give others. He's all of a sudden on the giving side. And he gives them a chair of honor, like a throne. In other words, first of all, that implies something that lasts for generations. It's like a throne, like a kingship, and it's a sign of tremendous honor, and it's something that lasts. Ki Lashem mitzukei eretz, because to Hashem are all of the strength of the land, the pillars. Vayoshes aleihem tevil, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu placed the dry land on these pillars. Meaning there's a constant hashkocha from HaKadosh Baruch Hu that keeps the world going, and Hashem is constantly supervising it and changing things. There's a Gemara near the end of Shabbos that Rav Chiya once said to his wife, in terms of giving tzedakah, you should give tzedakah in order that when your children need stucco, others will give them. So she said, well, what kind of a curse is that? And those our children should have to go around begging for stucco. So he answered, that's the way things go. Anius, poverty is like a wheel that turns in the world. People are constantly, one generation, you know, the person was struggling as a peddler, and his son is the professional, you know, and then but the next generation, or if not the next, the generation after that, very often it reverts back. There's a constantly changes, and as we see here, not just in wealth and poverty, but even in children, in terms of strength, everything is from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, with HaKadosh Baruch Hu's cheshbonos and reasons for it. But based on the way we act, it doesn't. Not everything has to change. Ragli chasidov yishmor. If somebody's a chassid and he perseveres in his service of Hashem and he has things good, the normal path is HaKadosh Baruch Hu guards the ragli chasidov. That not everything is changed. If the person's actions warrant it, sometimes he can have a downfall. But ragli chasidov yishmor, the person remains a chassid, remains strong in his serving Hashem, Hashem protects him. Rishoyim, those who are wicked, b'choshech yidom, they're like cut off in the darkness. Ki lo v'choach yigbarish. Not with strength does a person overcome. As a person's success is not based on his success, is based on his strength. The Gemara also learns out ragli chasid of yishmor. It's not only in terms of his physical well-being, that if the person's a chassid, Hashem will take care of him and guard him. But in ruchnius, in terms of the way he serves Hashem, if a guy acts as a chassid, and the guy is presented with an aveira, and he overcomes, and then the aveira comes his way again, and again he subdues the Yetzirah. So ragli chassidov, by the feet, meaning at the end of this, or as if he's gone through it twice and he's overcome the Yetzirah, from then on, he's protected. The first time it's hard, the second time it's hard, but if you persevere, of course, you know, a person always has to, al tamin ba'atzimcha ad yom moischa. You can't be sure until a person is nifter, he can't be sure that he won't be misled. But ordinarily, it's hardest at the beginning. And if the person's a chassid, Hashem will guard that he won't have his downfall. The Gemara also learned something which isn't applicable to too many of us, but if a person's gone through most of his life without an Aveira, Ragli Chassid of Yishmar, then the second half of life will be easy. If you haven't done an Avera the first half, Hashem will guard and take care of the rest. So this was her praise to Hashem, that she has this child. As I say, what I find so inspiring about this is, this song is like 2 years after. You know, she had her child Shmuel, she stayed home with him for 2 years, she comes up with Eli, but she sings the song right now with a strong conviction. She knows it's all from Hashem, and it hasn't diminished her, the fact that she's giving up her child to be raised by Eli. She's happy with it. She's happy with it, with this decision that her child is going to be to serve Hashem. And here comes her request in Pasuk Yud. Hashem, Yechatu Merivov. Those who quarrel with Shmuel, we'll see the Plishtim, and the ancient Palestinians, the old Plishtim, who caused problems for Shmuel, they should be cut off. Olov, because of Shmuel, for Shmuel, Bashamayim Yarem, from Shemayim, from heavens, there should be a thunder. And we'll see there was. There was a thunder when he first fought against the Plishtim. They heard, obviously it wasn't just like our ordinary thunder. This was a thunder that struck a tremendous fear and panic in the enemy and helped bring a Yeshua to Klal Yisrael. And we'll see there was a thunder later when Shmuel spoke to Klal Yisrael. But there was thunder created specially for Shmuel. And Hashem, Yodin Av Seoretz, Shmuel should be able to judge the corners of the earth, which he did. He traveled all around in Eretz Yisrael, judging people, settling things, teaching the Torah of Hashem. V'yiten oiz l'malkoi, Hashem should give strength to his king, to Shmuel's king. Shmuel's going to make a king Shaul. Hashem should give Shaul strength. V'yorem keren Meshicho, and the one that he anoints with a special Shemen HaMishcho, with that special oil. The Yoreim Keren Mashicho, the pride, the glory of his anointed, of David HaMelech, should be raised, should be elevated. Here you see clearly the fact that Chana was one of the Nevios. She said in Nevuah that Shmuel, and Klal Yisrael knew that Klal Yisrael had to make a king. There's a mitzvah in the Torah, Som Tosim Alech HaMelech, and we'll be discussing that later in Sefer Shmuel. But they knew there had to be a king. But here she was mispalled to her song that she knew that Shmuel was going to choose one king, and there was going to be somebody else who was anointed, and there should be V'yitzen Oz L'malkoi V'yorim Keren Meshicho. The Targum, by the way, teaches that the song is on the simple level. The Targum explains how in this song it alluded to Sancheiriv, and it alluded to Nebuchadnezzar, and to the Chashmonoim, and to Haman, and they're all referred to different psukim in the Targum printed right on the side. In each pasuk, it alluded to many different things, which the truth is, in general, everything that's said by a Navi has many layers of meanings, and there's the simple meaning, and then there's the deeper meaning. And how exactly it's seen in the Pesukim. This was the Tefillah of Chana. Pasuk Yud Aleph. We're going to try to, Mirtz Hashem, cover about half the Perek this week. Perek Beis is a very large Perek. We'll try to cover around half of it, and then we'll, Mirtz Hashem, next week finish. There's 9 times that it says in this Tefillah Hashem's name. The tefillah of Chana, the reason we have 9 brachas on Rosh Hashanah, is to correspond with the tefillah of Chana. Chana was remembered on Rosh Hashanah. We have a number of even piyutim mentioning in the davening about her tefillah was answered. Chana was remembered on Rosh Hashanah. It says Hashem's name 9 times. And the last pasuk refers to the fact, Yodin Hashem Yodin Afsei Oretz, which can be alluding to the fact that Hashem will judge the corners of the earth, that on Rosh Hashanah the whole world is judged. Okay, Shmuel is staying by Eli. Elkanah went back to the Ramah, to his house. Al-Beisa, he didn't say El-Beisa, Al-Beisa. Al-Beisa can mean he went back to Roma for his house. After all, he's going to be, he had more sons and daughters. I don't think all of them were born yet. Within 2 years, maybe there was another one. I don't know, but he went back to take care of his household. V'hanar hayim misharis es Hashem. And Shmuel served Hashem es pnei Eli HaKohen, before Eli HaKohen, in the presence of Eli HaKohen. He was at an age that serving Hashem meant serving and developing this attachment and this closeness and learning from Eli HaKohen, who was in the chain of the Mesorah, of Shalshalas HaTorah, meaning the Torah was passed from Moshe Rabbeinu to Yoshua and went from leader to leader to leader. Eli HaKohen was, in his generation, he was the individual who had the body of Torah and passed it on, and Shmuel was the next one. Shmuel was Mishoris HaShem before Eli HaKohen. That's where he got his teaching from, his Mesorah from, and that's where he developed who he is. And I saw the Al-Sheikh points out over in these few psukim are just a lot of observations. In terms of chinuch, you can have somebody like Elkanah. Elkanah himself was a Novi, and we'll see later on, not this week, but we'll see later on the Nevuah that Elkanah said. Elkanah was a Novi. And we discussed in Perek Aleph how he used to travel and he was inspiring and he got people to be Oila, Regel, to come up to Shiloh. Elkanah was a major tzaddik and a leader, one of the great people. And I saw the Al-Sheikh points out over in these few psukim are just a lot of observations. In terms of chinuch, you can have somebody like Elkanah. Elkanah himself was a Novi, and we'll see later on, not this week, but we'll see later on the Nevuah that Elkanah said. Elkanah was a Novi. And we discussed in Perek Aleph how he used to travel and he was inspiring and he got people to be Oila, Regel, to come up to Shiloh. Elkanah was a major tzaddik and a leader, one of the great people of the individual of the generation. Not only that, he was a Levi. So really, Elkanah could have stayed in Mishkan Shiloh and also done the Avodah. Eli didn't do it by himself, or what the Levium did in Shiloh. He could have spent the bulk of his time in Shiloh. Not every Levi was there, not all the time. But Elkanah, after all, you know, this is Mishkan Shiloh. He was one of the greatest people of the generation. He had a son there, Shmuel. And yet, he left Shmuel in yeshiva, and he went back to his house, his Avodas Hashem. He went back where they had Sofim Mihar Ephraim. He was among the school of the Nevi'im. He had his Derech of Avodas Hashem. And Shmuel was raised by Eli. And a lot of times you can have that. You can have, it's interesting to note among Gedolim, a lot of times there's a father who's a Gadol and the son who's a Gadol, and they don't have the same Derech of Avodas Hashem. And here Shmuel developed his greatness, even though his home, you couldn't have looked for a better home. Somebody like, with parents like Elkanah and Chana, but Eli was the one who raised him. And he was serving as Pnei Eli HaKohen before Eli HaKohen. Uvnei Eli Bnei Belial. The sons of Eli were Bnei Belial. Belial normally means wicked. It's used in terms of people who are Ovid Avodah Zorah, worship idols. They were Bnei Belial. Lo Yodu Es Hashem, they didn't know Hashem. As if to juxtapose the two, that Shmuel, who was an Eli's son, he was Mesharis Es Hashem. He served Hashem. And Eli's own sons were Bnei Belial Lo Yodu Es Hashem. It's possible, and then Al-Shach makes that point also, it's possible somebody could be a tremendous tzaddik from the Gedolei Hador. It's not a guarantee that the children turn out as he is. It could be the same chinuch, as he raised Shmuel, and you see what he produced. He produced with a Shmuel b'kairei Shmai, yet with his own children he wasn't able to have that success. They would enable Yal the Yadu Es Hashem. The term Belial literally means Beli, Ol, without the yoke. In other words, they don't feel the belial. It comes from an ol, a yoke, and without the feeling the responsibility. Now, a child you wouldn't call belial because a child doesn't know that he's supposed to have any responsibility. He's not supposed to. He doesn't know any better. Once somebody's an adult and he realizes what he's supposed to be doing in this world, so if he doesn't do it, like for a common person, if instead of serving Hashem, he worships idols, he's an Oved Avodah Zarah, that's called a belial. He doesn't accept the yoke of Hashem. The truth is, B'nai Eli, could be they weren't as bad as they seem. There's an Avera later, which is mentioned later in the Perek, that the Gemara says B'nai Eli, Kol Omer B'nai Eli Chotu Eino El Atoya. Certain things that the Psukim seem to say they sinned, they're not responsible for, and they didn't. They're just written that way because from the eyes of a Navi looks at things with a different perspective than we do. We're more understanding of our frailties because we live with it. We know that people make mistakes and nobody's perfect, but for a Navi, he looks at things differently. So we'll see later exactly. Could be the B'nai Eli weren't as bad as the Psukim seem to make them out to be. They were judged as bad as it is because L'maisa, they were in Shiloh. If somebody's in Shiloh and you're right before HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Lo Yodu Es Hashem, how is it possible somebody's in Mishkan Shiloh and he doesn't know Hashem? You're in such an environment. So what they do, and whatever faults they have, are magnified that they're in such a place and they still don't accept the responsibility of serving Hashem in the way that Eli was. They're called B'nai Belial, Lo Yodu Es Hashem. Now let's see the complaint. U'mishpat HaKohanim Es Ha'am. Those words, they have a similar phrase in the Torah. V'zeh yeh mishpat HaKohanim Es Ha'am. The law of the Kohanim from the people is they got certain portions of when an animal was shechted, the Kohen was given certain parts. By the Korbanos, he was given the chazah and the shok, by the neck area, the brisket, I think they say it is, and the shay and the arm, the shaykh. Mishpat HaKohanim Es Ha'am, but they made an additional law, meaning it's not enough what the Torah promises them. From the Korbanos, they should get more meat than the Torah granted them. This was a law that they made with the people. Mishpat HaKohanim Es Ha'am. Kol ish zoveach zevach, anybody who shechted a korban, uvon nar ha-koyen kebashel ha-bosar, the lad of the koyen, he had like servants, na'arim, the lad of the koyen would come, kevashel ha-bosar, as the meat is cooking, v'hamazlik shlosh ha-shinayim biyodo, and he had a fork with three prongs in his hand. And we're going to see exactly how he took the meat. But the Malbim mentions, first of all, there's a taina that they made their own law, what they're allowed to take. We'll see in a moment. They stuck the fork in, they took what they wanted, even though it wasn't the part that the Torah granted them. That was one complaint. The second taina was, it was kol ish zoveach zevach, from anybody who brought a korban, meaning some people can afford to give more to the kohen. Different people have different circumstances. Everybody's coming to Shiloh. Everyone has his own story. He would, from everybody who brought a korban, they would take more than they were entitled to. Not only that, they didn't come personally and in a respectful way come and take this new tithe or whatever, this new part that they had decided they're entitled to. But they sent a nar hakayim. They sent an underling. Somebody would show up at the pot and say, oh, my master, the sons of Eli, I'm working for the boss, and we're entitled to more meat. Vehiko bakior, he would take this fork, and it hit the pot. It wasn't gentle, even though it's a cliche race, these pots had kedusha. But he stuck his fork in with a big bang, with a gusto. He banged on the pot. Oh, ba dude. Or on the cauldron, oba kalachas, or in a pan, oba poror, or in a kettle. These are different types of cooking utensils. Kol asher yale hamazleg, whatever came up on the fork, yikach ha-kayin boy, the kayin would take. Whatever he stuck his fork in, whatever he got on the fork, he took. The pasuk makes a point of telling you every different type of cooking pot. To tell you, you know, sometimes a person came with a korban, it was a big par, a big ox. So you probably have pounds and pounds and pounds of meat. And it's cooking in this big pot. So if a guy takes a fork with three prongs and you just stick it in and you take whatever comes up, that's one thing. If the guy's got a little kettle, he brought a little lamb or a little sheep, there's not too much meat over there. And he doesn't want to take a big pot. Takes a little pot, a parur. Now, if you take the same fork with the three prongs and you stick it in, and you should know a fork is more effective than a spoon. If you take a spoon, there's, you know, sometimes you get one piece and it sits there, and that's all you can lift up. If you have, it stresses, it had three prongs. So with every prong, you can get a different piece. And if you do it without force, you might get a small piece. If you bang it into the pot with a lot of gusto, you can really get the pieces to get, the fork sinks in deeply, and you can really get a lot of meat on that fork. And that's what they did. Kocha yasu l'chol Yisrael. That's what they would do for all of Klal Yisrael, haboim shom b'shiloh, that came to Shiloh. That was their taina b'inorim l'chaveiro. What was their reasoning? It's not clear. It could be, you know, I saw the Das Sofrim brings down, it could be the Kohanim had to rely on the people for, there's, you know, it's like it checks and balances. On one hand, we all need the Kohanim to do our Avodah in the Beis HaMikdash or in Mishkan Shiloh. We need the Kohanim to do their Avodah. On the other hand, they can only live based on the gifts that the Yisrael would give them. And he's got to take your word for it a lot of times. You know, he has to make sure you give your, you bring your korbanos and you bring enough. And a lot of it is up to the people, how many shlomim they bring. So it could be the Kohanim were having a rough time financially and they just weren't able to manage based on what the Torah prescribed. So they announced this is a law that the Kohen should be able to take more. And I don't know if the law itself was so terrible, but it was sort of the way it was. It was put into action. The way it was put into action created such a sour feeling by the people. Now that was the Bein Odom L'Chaveiro. But there was also a spiritual complaint against them. The normal way a korban worked is it was brought in the Beis HaMikdash and the blood was spritzed on the Mizbeach. And the fats of the korban were the chalev was burnt on the mizbeach, and then after everything was done in the service of Hashem, then the people ate, the kohanim ate, and the people ate. In fact, kohanim oichlin ubailim miskaprim. When the kohanim ate, that brought a kapara to the people. The eating was like a holy occasion. It wasn't just you enjoy eating meat. It wasn't stam a party. It was a holy, imagine your holiest eating. You know, you're eating your suda before Yom Kippur or something like that. The mood when they ate the korban was, the eating it was part of the avodas Hashem and required a certain kedusha and was supposed to have a certain frame of mind. Now, it happens to be when you eat the korban, it's supposed to taste good. It's given to the Kohanim L'moshcha as a sign of greatness. And they're supposed to eat it the way they like it. Like the Gemara says, if they like it with mustard, they're supposed to have it with mustard. Now, is the korban is supposed to be eaten? No, it's not, you know, no, they're supposed to eat it in an enjoyable manner. And yet, the focus is not supposed to be on how good the steak is. The problem over here is Gam Beterem Yaktiru Nesachelev. Before the chelev was burnt on the Mizbeach, they're not allowed to eat, and they don't have a right to accept, to demand their portion. There's a chus to get it, is after the korban is burnt on the Mizbeach. It's not a clear, the Malba mentions it, it's not necessarily usur for the kohen to take his portion earlier. Just he doesn't have a right to it, the owner can say. You know, he's not allowed to eat it. The kohen is not allowed to eat it before they are makdi or the chalev, but to receive it and just you'll eat it later, that's allowed. But normally you wait until everything is done on the Mizbeach first. And gam b'terem yaktiru nesa chilev, sometimes before they even burnt the chilev on the Mizbeach, v'onar ha-koyin, this lad of the koyin would come, v'amar le'ish ha-zoveach, and he would say to the man who's bringing the korban, t'nov asar, give the meat, litzlos la-koyin, for the koyin to roast. He won't take from you cooked meat, like was cooked in one of these pots. He'll take it raw. Now, he wanted the meat early, but he wanted the owner to agree to this. So he said, you know, if you give it to me early, you stand to gain. First of all, you know that I come around with a fork, and if it's in the pot, I'm going to scoop out from whatever I'm going to get, whatever comes on that fork, I'm taking. But if you want to know basar, you can decide to give the meat. In other words, you'll decide what you want to give me. I won't stick my thing in the fork, and who knows, maybe I get the part of the meat that you would have liked. You can give on your own whatever you want. That's first of all. Second of all, you don't have the aggravation of having to cook it. If you're giving it away anyways, you can give it away. He won't take it from you cooked, he'll take it raw. The kayan today wants to have his meat roasted. So give it to him raw, you can decide how much to give him, and he'll take it like that. Vayomrei lov ha'ish. The person would say to him, would respond to this nar ha'kayin, Kater yaktirun kayoim ha'chelev. They'll be burning the chelev. Kayoim is like around today. No, it's approximately today will get burnt, because the emurim didn't have to get burnt during the day. It could be brought at night also. Hekter chalovim ve'ivorim could be done at night. But if not today, tonight, it's. But by tomorrow morning, it's definitely the fats are all burnt. We'll be burning the fat shortly. Kayon, v'kach lecha, and then you can take kasher ta'aven avshecha like you desire. Or the fact that the Kohanim wanted to have more meat, it could be the people understood their situation. The people didn't mind. Just let us bring the chalev, and then you can take. You'll decide what you want, v'kach lecha, as you desire, kasher ta'av nafshecha, as you desire. V'amar loy. And the Nara Kohen would say to him, or the ksivas v'amar loy, would say, no, I refuse. Both meanings are relevant. He says to the Nara Kohen, v'amar loy, ki ato sita, and I want you to give it right now. V'imlo, and if not, lakachti v'chozka, I'm going to take it by force. In other words, no is not an option over here. I'm asking you, but there's only one answer you can give. It's not vasar, and you can't, don't say no. The truth is, the Gemara discusses, Abaye says in Chulinda and Kuf Lamed Gimel, Abaye says he was actually asked, as a faher, by Rabbah. He said to him, is it better for a kohen to grab his portion? Let's say you see somebody and he's bringing the portion that goes to the kohen. He's bringing it to a kohen. Should another kohen go and grab it or not? What should be the logic? Why should he grab it? A different kohen that's not even intended for him? The question is that called a bizui mitzvah? Is that despising a mitzvah, cheapening it? Or is that showing chivuve mitzvah, how dear a mitzvah is to you? The Gemara says in Brochus, on Shabbos, a person, when he sits down with his lecha mishnah and he's cutting the challah, he can be sitting even all by himself, and he can be sitting there with a big challah and think to himself, you know, I'm hungry right now, I'm planning on eating half a challah. So he takes his knife, cuts through the challah with half a piece, and takes a bite from it. And the Gemara says if he would do that during the week, it looked like he's a ravsan, like he's a glutton. That's not the way to eat. You're supposed to eat, the derech eretz is, you take a piece bigger than a kazayas, but not as big as a kebaya. You take a normal size piece and you take a bite. You don't take a big chunk. But if a person during the week shows restraint when he eats, and then on Shabbos he eats with a lot of gusto, it shows that he cares about the suda of Shabbos. It's not a guy who always digs in. The whole week long he eats with a lot of moderation. Shabbos, he shows his joy and his simcha for Shabbos, eats with gusto. And that's a proper thing. A person can do that on Shabbos. The question is that right for a kohen to do? Should a person say, you know, there's a chance for a kohen, I want to grab another chance because it's a mitzvah to eat this. It's a mitzvah to eat the kachim. And Abaye said,
Abaye held mitchila, it's a mitzvah to grab the matnas kahuna. To show the chivu for the mitzvah. When he was told that the pasuk says, v'nosan la koyein, that the owner gives the matonas to whoever koyein he wants to give it, and it's his decision, so then Abaye stopped grabbing it. He wouldn't take it, but he would ask for it to show that he taka wants it. Then we'll see later on there was a complaint, Vayatu Acharei Abotza, that the Bnei Eli had even asking for it wasn't proper. So he stopped asking for it. But at least he would accept it. Then when he realized that there's other Sukumashma, if there's a lot of people who want it, it's more proper to even decline. So he would decline, just he would accept it on Erev Yom Kippur, so that everybody should realize he was a Kayin. But anyways, there is a certain value in showing that you really, really want it. But it was done in the wrong way. It was, in other words, people were left as a, when you read through the psukim, and it sounds like highway robbery, that's what it actually seemed to be. In other words, here they're coming to the Mishkan, it's supposed to be a holy thing, and it seems like everyone's out to just get the meat. And it cheapens the whole Avodas Hashem. V'atahi chatas hana'orim gedoylim o'yres p'nei Hashem. The chatas of the na'orim, of these lads of the Kohanim, was very great before Hashem. Because the men despised this minchas Hashem, the mincha of Hashem. Mincha normally is a general term for korbanos. Even though usually mincha means a korban of flour with oil, the pasuk of actually mentioning chelkom nasati osa meishoi, that the Kohanim get their chelik after the part is put on the mizbeach, that is mentioned by a mincha. So it could be that's why the pasuk here refers to the minchas Hashem. But they despise the minchas Hashem. You know, it was striking me that it's a difficult thing for a gabbai to do. But the truth is it's in every aspect of avodas Hashem. As a person should know, when you daven for the amud, the truth is you're not doing the tzibur a favor. You're not doing him a favor by davening for the amud. It's a tremendous kavod. In other words, it's not the pshat, oh, there's nobody else. No, there's nobody else. Go ahead and daven. This is just like my personal feeling. Now, I haven't been a gabbai. I'm sure the gabbai will tell you, you know, what can you do? You know, you tell people, you know, today's your lucky day. You are being given this unique opportunity to represent the tzibur in davening before the amud. A lot of them will say, you know, I don't feel that I'm worthy of this. Which is the way they're supposed to feel. And then you ask them a second time, and then they move a little as if they're ready to get up, so that by the third time they get up. But it's really supposed to be that type of thing. A person feels, oh, I'm not worthy to daven for the Amud. And you come and you present it to him, whatever. It's not, nobody wants to daven, and you ask somebody, and you got to beg him to daven, whatever. But it's only easy for the gabbai if everybody else cooperates and they go to daven when they're after being asked two or three times. But it's a sense you see from the parsha the inyan of how the avodas Hashem has to be handled in the right way. Ushmuel mishareis es p'nei Hashem, but Shmuel was serving before Hashem, and here it doesn't mention Eli HaKohen. At this point already, I don't know exactly, you know, how many years or whatever, at which point Shmuel was up to. But we're up to in the story, he had already found his role in Avodas Hashem, and he didn't need, he was Mesharis as Pnei Hashem, without mentioning Eli. By himself, he was already Mesharis as Pnei Hashem. Nar, he was young, he was a Nar, Chagur Eifod Bod, and he was wearing the Eifod Bod, Bod is linen. And the Eifod is some type of apron, like the Kohen Gadol had an Eifod. And you find by Dovin HaMelech he wore an ephod bod. And when the city of Novi Rakonim was wiped out, it mentions that they all wore ephod bod. It wasn't worn, obviously there was a similar type of dress. If somebody will tell you in the yeshivas and the Beis Yaakovs, we have a certain dress code. I can tell you this is a source for the dress code. If you were out to serve Hashem, they wore this ephod bod. They wore this special uniform. Some say this was mentioned in the terms that the sons of Eli like despised Avodas Hashem. They cheapened it. They didn't care about it. It wasn't meaningful. Shmuel went to other extreme, and he wanted to be identified. That when somebody should see Shmuel, He's a member of the clergy. He works in Mishkan Shiloh. He wore that to show that he identifies with Avodas Hashem. So while others were going around and cheapening it and denigrating it and acting in a way that brought scorn and derision to Avodas Hashem, Shmuel was the opposite. He was serving before Hashem and he wanted to show that he was part of it and that this is, in other words, he dressed the role. You know, people say a lot of times in the yeshivas will say, the boy's got to dress a certain way. And somebody will say, what's the difference how I dress? You know, well, the yeshiva should say, what's the difference how I dress? And the school will say, you're right, it really doesn't make a difference how a person dresses. You know, what the person's, the way Hashem values a person has nothing to do with the way he's dressed. But it's a small thing, and that's the way we'd like him to do. And the boy says, no, you know, it's a small thing, it's really not important, but I like to dress the way I am. And the school says, it's really a small thing, it's not important, but dress the way, you know, we demand. And the truth is, because even though everyone realizes it's a small thing, but to a certain extent it's a big thing, because the way a person envisions himself. When he wore ephod bud, as the pshat, he's identifying himself, this is his role, and this is who he is. A guy puts on a certain uniform to show he's a policeman. That's who he is. This guy, Shmuel, is a chogar ephod bud. Me'il katan tasalo imoy, his mother made for him a small me'il, a garment. I say the Kohen Gadol also had, one of the begotten was a me'il. But this wasn't big day kuna, this was just, Shmuel was a Levi. But she made him this little me'il. V'hal salom yomim yomim, and she bring it up to him yearly. Some discussed that it doesn't mean that she brought up this special outfit for him to wear once a year when she came up, or it doesn't mean every year she made another one, you know, with the next a larger size. But she made him this little me'il, ba'aloisa es isha, when she came up together with her husband, lizboyach es zevach hayomim, to bring the yearly carbon. In other words, some stress. In other words, she didn't give him that much. She gave him a garment. That was the extent of what she brought him. She didn't want his thoughts to be too focused on the. Or Shmuel should know that his parents are behind him. They want him to succeed in his avodas Hashem. Things should go well with him. But it wasn't a over. In other words, they knew he was in good hands. He was succeeding. He was developing. She made him a little me'il that he should know that his mother cares for him. And that was it. And every year she would see him. Uveirach Eli es Elkanah ves Ishtoi. Eli gave a bracha to Elkanah to his wife. Va'amar, and he said, Yosem Hashem lecha zera. Hashem should give you children, mino isha azois, from this woman, from Chana. Tachas ha-she'ela shershoal Hashem, in replacement. Either this could mean of what you've loaned to Hashem, that they took their son Shmuel and they gave him over to spend the rest of his life in Mishkan Shiloh. Or it could mean that Elkanah asked for a bracha, Hashem, Hashem, Shalom, Hashem. He asked from Hashem to have more children. Elkanah said, you should have more children from this woman. Which is a tremendous bracha if you think about it, because Eli realized he might not have thought his children were as terrible as the psukkah make them out to be, but he realized his children were not the way, things were not the way they should be at in his house. And yet he was able to give a bracha that Elkanah should have more children from Chana, that they should have nachas and they should have hatzlocha with their children, even though he could see that with his own children it wasn't working out the way he would have liked it to be. And then Elkanah and Chana went back to his place and went back home. They visited Shmuel, they brought their karbonos, she brought him the me'il, and then they went back home. They didn't remain. The Bar Benel, others learned that the children that are born, all those that are born should go to the place of Elkanah and stay with Elkanah. Or the one child he gave up to the Avodas Hashem. The rest of the children should be that he should raise and should be with him. Hashem remembered Chana, Vatar Vatelet Shlosh Avonim Ushtei Vonois, and she gave birth to three sons and two daughters. Vayigdal Hanar Shmuel Im Hashem, but the Nar Shmuel was the one who grew together with Hashem. The other ones we don't know anything about. They certainly didn't reach the level of Shmuel. It was Shmuel. But the other ones remained and were raised by Elkanah and his wife, and they had the rest of their family. Next week we'll go into exactly, we told it the way it is in this parak, what was going on with B'nai Eli. Now we'll see how Eli reacts and what the Pesukim say would happen to the sons of Eli. This year is sponsored Le'ilui Nishmas, my grandfather, Harav Aharon Chaim Ben Hagon Rav Gershon Lapidus. He came to America after a number of siblings were nifter from illnesses and diseases in Eretz Yisrael. He came to America as a foreigner, and he fought to have for Torah, for Yiddishkeit, in a number of different positions. He had a rough life traveling around. I'm named after him, and his life is an inspiration to me. Yehi Zichro Baruch. For sponsorships, please call 718-436-3024. Thank you. In Hasmaras HaTayra and in Godless HaTayra, Yehi Zichro Baruch. For sponsorship opportunities, please call 718-436-3024.